Hi everyone, and welcome to today's episode of Ask Margot. I'm Margot de Coatsworth, and I'm your host today, answering questions of great importance that you have sent in for me to do that with. Each episode, I talk about one aspect of something I do and why I'm here answering these questions. Today, I'd like to talk about retreats. I've trained with a company that is probably the best in the world at putting together really transformational retreats. They train retreat leaders to do a great job at running these retreats. They could be for yoga, for mothers, for people managing grief, for business, for well-being, you name it. If it can be shared as a retreat, this company helps train people with that. They coach retreat leaders, making their retreats the best. Someone even had a naked one for men. Okay. Moving along now. I have a couple of retreats we're planning now. One is a super luxury one in April, and that's a pricey option for many people. And there are lots of considerations involved: flights, accommodation, staff, insurance, all those things. With COVID, some retreat leaders switched to online and created virtual retreats to fill the gap at that time. But I thought, wouldn't it be great if you could put together a really fabulous retreat that was designed to be taken in your own home, especially if you're quite a private person and you don't necessarily want to do a lot of the sharing circle thing, but where you could get the same amazing benefits without leaving home. Anyway, I'm working on that, and retreats are the thing I do. They involve guiding people to see their value, to find out at a subconscious level why they have an issue and to fix it. I'm not interested in talk therapy. I'm really only interested in fix-it therapy. Do you know, I met a woman the other day, a therapist, who told me she practiced long talk therapy. I thought I had misheard her, but I couldn't relate to that at all. It's the opposite of my philosophy in the therapy I practice. I like to find out why, like to see it fixed, and I like to see people move on to live happily ever after. So that's my little intro for today. Onwards towards the day's questions. The first question we have today is from Marianne. She says she's feeling overwhelmed and overloaded, which makes her feel anxious. She wants to know what to do to manage that. Well, you're not alone in feeling this, Marianne. It's a big issue today in the world. I have noticed that when I feel upset about something, I automatically seem to begin to breathe very deliberately, with a lot of emphasis on the out-breath. I'm not aware of deciding to do this. It just happens. When I find myself breathing like this, I can observe myself and realize something's really bothering me. And I notice that I'm feeling disconcerted about it. And it's obviously my way of regulating. In a way, if we're controlling our breathing, we're controlling our state and our body. That would be my first suggestion. Manage your breathing. Go deep and slow. It stabilizes and grounds you. It switches your attention from the thing that's bothering you back to you. It's calming and centering. The second thing is what you say to yourself. You must give yourself a pep talk, an encouraging one-way flow of affirmative statements like, I'm in control of my life, even if it feels out of control. Don't worry about that, you say it anyway. I have amazing coping skills. I can deal with anything that life throws at me. I am in charge of my state, my mind, and my body. Do you see where I'm coming from? All these statements will focus you on your power and not your lack of it. Because feeling anxious is about powerlessness. The third thing you can do when something shows up in life that is really more than you think you can deal with at that time is to project yourself forward in time and ask yourself, how much will this matter in 5 years' time? It hardly ever matters that much. So try those three things, Marianne: breathing slowly and deliberately, talking yourself into feeling that you're in control, and realizing that some things don't matter much in the long run, because we do often worry over things that aren't actually that important. If you're in a situation where someone is having a go at you, just excuse yourself. Nobody said you have to stay. Nobody says you have to answer a question. Nobody says you have to subject yourself to a grilling. You can quite politely and legitimately say, excuse me for a moment, or I need a moment, and walk away. My daughter and I love Jane Austen's work and how the characters deliver exactly what they want to say in no uncertain terms, but in the most formal and polite way. Then they bow and they just leave. I think we sometimes feel we're obliged to respond in a particular way to people, but we're not. And you can just say, oh, could you excuse me, and walk away if you feel you're not able to cope. I hope that that helps. I hope that those little tips will help you to manage your anxiety. And, oh, I shouldn't have said that because I have a thing about owning it. So I should say, when you're feeling anxious, try those things and you will feel better. Now, our second question today is from Robert. He says he keeps getting a lot of pressure from his partner about not picking up after himself and being as tidy as she would like. He says he was fine when he lived alone. He managed to cope, but her standards seem to be what she calls higher than his, and she's always on to him to pick up his game. Robert wants to know what to do when there's an imbalance between two people in terms of housekeeping. What should he do to keep her happy without having to be a different person? Ooh, well, this is an age-old one, Robert, and of course it's not gender-specific. So it can be either men or women who are a bit messy. I have a number of friends where it's the man who's the tidy boy. Let me tell you a little story. I saw this on Instagram recently and I forwarded it to huge numbers of people because it was so interesting. Picture a man sitting on a couch. The woman walks into the room and is at her wit's end. She says she can't do it all anymore. She tells him the washing, cooking dinner, packing and unpacking the dishwasher, shopping, housekeeping. She just can't continue to live like this. The man looks at her and tells her she should just relax because it will all be okay. It'll all be fine. She says, how? He says, I'll tell you, but he hadn't told her to date because he was worried he would jinx it. He asked her to follow him through to the laundry and he stopped in front of the laundry basket. He said, I've been doing this since we moved in. He says, see this basket thing? I don't know how, but any dirty clothes you put in this basket, the next day, they will just turn up perfectly folded on your bed. She said, I can't believe this. He said, no, I don't know how. He said, you should just try it. You'll see, unless it's only chosen me. She said, are you insane? And goes to walk away. And as she goes to walk away, he says, but wait, there are other things. Come with me. And he takes her to the lounge and to the coffee table, which just has a couple of magazines on top. He said that whatever he leaves on it, plates, cutlery, pizza boxes, dirty tissues, anything you leave on the coffee table just vanishes overnight. I mean, sometimes, he said, I see how far I can push this thing and I'll just leave S dot 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 everywhere. And sure enough, the next day, it's all gone, just like magic. She walks out of the room. The next scene shows two policemen, a man and a woman. And this chap who has been talking all this time says, no, she would never leave me. This is what I think happened. She got up in the middle of the night to get a drink or something and somehow fell into the magic coffee table and just vanished. The woman policeman said, are you insane? And the male policeman said, no, he's not insane. I have the same coffee table at home. So, just goes to show something. It's just a bit of fun, but Robert, I suggest a powwow between the two of you. Maybe start on a big positive foundation and take her out. Sometimes withdrawing from the scene of the crime is what's required. See it as a date. It establishes how you feel about her, how important she is, and how you respect her. Then you will give her the floor, and she will calmly state what she does and does not want. You will take notes. Take a notebook for this purpose, and that will show her you are serious. You will ask her what her non-negotiables are, and you will state yours. You will take notes and a notebook for this purpose, as it will show that you are serious. You'll ask her what her non-negotiables are, and you will state yours. You'll find middle ground and agree to what jobs and responsibilities each of you has. You will both accept and agree on what you've decided. You also need to have time frames, once a week, daily, every night before you retire, etc. So you don't end up doing the dishwasher, but just once a month. You'll nod and smile and pour her another glass of wine. You'll tell her she looks great and she's an amazing person and that you'll be lost without her. Lastly, you will actually do what you agreed to do. This will make you the man, and she will not disappear in the middle of the night, leaving you blaming the magic disappearing coffee table. It's all about communication, and it's all about collaboration, and finding the things that really bother you, trying to find a way to make those work, and letting the things go that aren't important, and then following through with your commitments. If you do those things, you'll find that you'll be able to find a harmonious, maybe middle ground. Maybe she'll come closer to your point of view. Maybe you'll go closer to hers. But looking like you're making an effort to make a change and then doing what you've committed to do will make you a hero in her eyes. Thank you for that question. Now, here's another one from Louisa. She says, how hard she feels it is to stay upbeat during winter. She just has to look at her wardrobe and finds it's full of dark winter colours and she just feels bad about it, even before she decides what to wear. She wants an easy way to update that and to feel good about winter without spending a lot of money. I completely understand that, Louisa. Winter can seem interminable sometimes, but there are ways to make it better and happier. First, you must stop buying any clothes that are black or grey or dull looking. And if your wardrobe is full of flat colours, then you have to add something clear and upbeat to offset it. Black pants are okay if you have a bright coloured top or jacket. I have a really fabulous yellowy orange shawl that's truly a joyful colour. People often try and run off with it. It makes me feel great having that wrapped around me. Even if I'm going out or staying home, it doesn't matter. It just is a feel-good item. I think colour is the key. Find your brightest, happiest coloured clothes. Hats, scarves, bags, gloves, even mad socks if you're a sock wearer. Things that have colour and life that you really love. Rifle through your wardrobe and choose those upbeat, colourful things to wear. Even if they're a bit summery, that doesn't matter. You can put a woolen layer underneath or a warmer layer underneath. My sister wears a lot of black, but she always puts white with it, which lifts it and gives it a fresh kind of pop. Even in winter, she'll wear a white shirt, but underneath there'll be some woolly thing. Try that, and just wear the things that make you happy, the pieces you love. It's fun to take up a challenge to be creative. If you feel like dressing up, just do it. Do it even for you. Even if you're going to the supermarket, if you feel like sequins and sparkle, go for it. Add that to jeans, put on some big wow earrings or lots of bright bangles and off you go. Wear fun shoes or a flower in your hair. Paint your nails a bright colour. The wonderful and inspired Marie Kondo, who is all about the art of tidying up and the joy of tidying up, says that we should let anything go that does not spark joy. And just surround ourselves by the things that light us up. It's a great life philosophy, and it can be applied to anything, from clothes to household things and even to people. But that's a subject for another time. The other thing is to add some colour to your environment, flowers or a flowering plant, a few bright cushions, and then work on candles and some great music. Just take good care of you. Try to appreciate the great things about winter. Fires, for example. Try a winter picnic with some friends. Light a fire on the beach. Ooh, somebody might say tsk tsk about that one. Savour the moment because spring will come soon enough. Oh, and there's one of my favourite tips about warmth. I don't believe there is anything warmer than Angora. Its fluffy wonder captures and warms the air between you and it. I love it. So you can have it straight against your skin and suddenly you're instantly warm. It's quite a challenge to find Angora these days, but it's certainly worth it if you can. It's better than cashmere. It's warmer because it's got the fluff. I hope those ideas are helpful, Louisa. Now, our last question today came up recently from Dick about how to make a value judgment about something, how to know what choice to make in any given situation, and whether a choice is good or not, right or wrong. There are many movies about today and a whole lot of history in the human race of people doing things in the so-called name of God. You know, wars, oppression, death and destruction, all the while holding up a banner that declares, we do what we do for great good and God. You know what I mean, the sort of stuff that makes you feel ill. I have a bit of Bible in my background, and I've found that people will sometimes say, the Bible says, and that means, so you must. Or they whip out one verse and say, ta-da, see, I'm right. You see the energy behind that? Do you feel it? There's a bit of pride and there's a bit of judgment that they're right and you're wrong. No matter the context, the historical situation or the interpretation. I always think, well, you must be sure to read the verses before and the verses after. And then you must ask yourself what was happening at that time. Because all of those things are influential. My point is that you must ask yourself, does this interpretation of anything in life really sound like it's consistent with the nature of God? Now, whether you believe in God or not is not the point here. Let's say good with a capital G if you don't want to do the God thing. Substitute that if you like. Ask yourself what's being suggested and does it sound like it comes from a place of caring, of connection, of valuing the other human being? It's easy enough. Any of us can do it. No special skills are involved. We can all ask ourselves, what is the feeling behind this? Because if it comes from judgment, from exclusion, from hate, from separation and division, and not unity, then you can confidently say to yourself, that's not right. I despair sometimes that we accept all kinds of things like little robotons. It's such a great word. I thought I made it up, but then I looked it up and it already exists. That we do things without thinking. We need to engage our brains and ask ourselves, does this make sense? We need to ask, what is the meaning behind this? If we accept something without knowing if it's right or wrong or what it actually means, then we quite possibly deserve to have to deal with the fallout of it. I guess going back to the wickedness and oppression that man has shown his fellow man, you could say that it was all based on greed and power. I think we can agree that greed is always a bad one. I see money as neutral. It's a tool which can do great bad, but also great good in the right hands, and we need more of that. But power is so interesting. It's a challenge for humans to deal with others with integrity and honour while wielding great power. Those who do a good job of that demonstrate one of the finest qualities that's possible for us. Humility can be a challenge when you're sitting on the top of the hill with a sparkly crown on and all the people have bent the knee. We owe it to ourselves and to others to question before we follow. A thought, a person, a philosophy. We mustn't follow any of these without first engaging our brains, because that's what they're there for. We must look at the meaning or the point behind what is being said or presented. What's the agenda? What is that person about. If you can't tell, ask yourself, does this feel that it's coming from a place of good, with a capital G, or not? Sometimes we might get upset about how we're being treated by somebody, but that person will say, I only come from a place of caring and love. Have you heard that? I've heard it. That can be a cloak, if you like, and underneath peaks something else, which is actually coming from a place of interference and feeling they know better. It's up to us to discern, and we have that ability. Just because someone says, I only do it because I care, doesn't mean that that's where it's actually coming from. In fact, I think that's a bit of an alert phrase. We do have the ability to wield the most wonderful insight, to see clearly what's behind what's being presented to us. We just need to tune in and practice using it. If someone is fired up and madly expounding, and you can tell they're full of condemnation and criticism, just give them a wide berth. I remember once someone asking me if I would meet for a chat, and I asked them why, because I felt there might be a spot of judgment coming. They said they wanted to know what I was up to. And I was hesitant because, as I told them, I felt that what they assessed about what I was doing would be based on their expectations and their experience of life and not mine. If someone ever accuses you of something that would never be you, say cheating or stealing, you can be sure that one, they don't know you, that's if you wouldn't do those things, and two, that they are basing what they are saying on their own life experience and expectation. Someone has either done that to them before, or they would consider it as an option. Do you see what I'm saying? That's their experience of life, and it's their expectations of what could be possible. It's actually about them, not you. So we need to think, to check in what's behind what we're being asked to accept or believe. We owe it to ourselves, and we know it. We owe it to others. Well, that's us for today. Do send in your questions, please, to admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or to me at margounlimited.com. You can go to contact and send me an email. Remember, if you feel stuck, or stumped, or sick, or I like to say small, which means the opposite of a sparkling, then tell me about it and we'll find a solution together. Thank you so much for being with me today. I'm Margot de Coatsworth and this is Ask Margot. To finish, we have our message from the universe for today. I call these messages the word. Here we go. Remember to breathe deeply when you feel agitated. Remember to find a happy thought. Remember to play the thank you game, aka count your blessings. Remember what you know and who you are. If you can do that, you will get back on track very quickly. Forward movement can only come when your train is on the tracks. If you jump off, your wheels may try to turn, but they won't take you where you want to go. On the tracks is where your progress will be. That is how you get to where you want to go. Thank you.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.